A woman who was new to Ajahn Phung's way of teaching was having a Dhamma discussion with him one time. She was talking about one of the defilements she encountered in her meditation. And he told her, just put it aside, focus on your breath. And she responded, shouldn't I try to cut it at the root? And he said, if you try to cut it at the root, the fruits of the tree are going to fall down on the ground and create new trees. Of course, what he meant was, you try to cut away at one defilement, and in the pride, other defilements that come up in the process of doing that will grow in your mind. Of course, that raises the question, if you can't cut the defilements, how do they get cut? This is especially important with regard to the fetters that bind us to samsara. The image of a fetter, of course, is something that has to be cut. But you don't cut it directly. You follow the path. The path leads to experience of the deathless. And that experience is what cuts through these things. This is a point that's widely misunderstood. You hear again and again that you have to cut the fetters first, and then you have the experience of stream entry. Often that's presented in a way that makes the fetters sound like the kind of thing you can think about, ponder, and see, yeah, you don't want to go there. This is especially true with the lower fetters, the three fetters that are cut at stream entry. Identity views, doubt, grasping at precepts and practices, or habits and practices. And then the two that are cut at non-return, sensual desire and irritation. People say that you can think about what the Buddha had to say about identity view, the idea that you identify yourself with any of the five khandhas, form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, consciousness, in any of four ways, either identifying directly with the khandha or aggregate itself, or saying that you are the owner of the aggregate, or that you are in the aggregate, or the aggregate is in you. 4 times 5 gives 20. And you think about it, yes, the aggregates are things that make up you, what you are. That's what they say. Actually, the aggregates are how you create your sense of self. But in any event, you see that these things are impermanent. And you agree with the Buddha, there is no permanent self there. Same with doubt. You ponder it for a while and you say, the Buddha is reasonable. He says things that are inspiring. I've tried some of the practices and they seem to work. So I have no doubts about him. As for grasping at habits and practices, often that's translated as grasping at rites and rituals. A lot of people say, well, we don't have any rites or rituals anymore. We may have the practice of chanting, practice of meditation. But we understand that that's not going to take us to awakening on its own. So there you are. Those three fetters are cut. And they're not cut at all. You've been hacking away at them. You may have weakened them. But they can still grow. Sometimes it's presented as a gradual process, where over time, without you really thinking about it, you become more and more convinced of the truth of the Buddhist teachings. And that cuts through a lot of your false social conditioning. The creation of a sense of I am this, we're told, is something that's reinforced by society. We might not have come up with it on our own. Our doubts about the Buddhist teachings, well, if we hadn't heard about the Buddhist teachings, we wouldn't have any doubts about them. And again, lots of societies don't have many rituals and rites. It's simply a matter of undoing your social conditioning, something you can think your way through, and gradually come to the conclusion that, yes, you do agree with the Buddha. But those fetters are nothing shallow like that. After all, the three lowest fetters are the things that not only bring you back to rebirth, but also can allow you to go to really low levels. And even though you may not have articulated views about the aggregates or even think in terms of the aggregates, you do have a strong sense of you are something, identifying with something. Even animals have that sense. They identify very strongly with their bodies and identify strongly with their food. You try to take their food away, they'll attack you. You attack them, they'll attack you back. As for doubts and habits and practices, you don't need to know about the Buddha's awakening to have doubts about what's right and wrong, what can be accomplished by your actions, whether death is followed by rebirth or whether it's followed by annihilation. You have lots of doubts about things that you should have some confidence in. You have confidence in a lot of things you should have doubts about, and confidence in certain ways of doing things. If you don't think that animals have rites and rituals, you really don't know animal behavior. They say that deer have certain paths that they follow through the forest. When the snow comes, they continue to follow the same paths, wear those paths down, eat all the bark in the trees right next to the paths. And if the winter is long, with lots of snow, they stay in those paths. And if there's no more bark left on the trees, they starve, even though there may be bark on the trees that are a little bit off the path. There's that story of Conrad Lawrence's goose, who the first time he entered his house was freaked out, saw a window at the end of the hall, ran down to the window. He, however, had to climb some stairs to his apartment to feed the goose, so he called the goose. The goose turned around, followed him up the stairs. And then every day after that, when he came into the house, he would first run to the window, then go to the stairs. Over time, the path to the window got shorter and shorter until finally he would go to that corner of the stairs, shake his foot at the window, and then head up the stairs. Then one night, Conrad Lawrence came home late. The goose was hungry. Conrad Lawrence opened the door. The goose ran in and immediately ran up the stairs, stopped halfway up, started shivering all over, and walked back down the stairs very methodically, walked to the window, came back, and went up the stairs. So animals have their rites and rituals. So those fetters are nothing shallow, nothing social. They go deep, particularly that one of the sense of I am this. This is my territory. Possessiveness is one of the qualities of many, many animals. So that kind of fetter is not going to be cut simply by thinking it through. It goes deep. And as the Buddha said, the conviction that overcomes doubt in the Buddha has to be confirmed. What's going to confirm it? Simply thinking through things, the Buddha calls pondering, through arriving at agreement with views. And that, he says, can sometimes be true and sometimes false. So it doesn't qualify as confirmed. It has to be something more radical. It goes deeper. And as for the idea that you have to abandon the fetters first and then have stream entry, there are many cases in the canon where the Buddha is teaching people, they attain stream entry while they're listening, and he never mentions the fetters. They know nothing about the fetters. Case of the five brethren, there's no mention of the fetters at all in the first sermon. Or the case of the assassin who was sent to kill the Buddha, who then stopped, put down his weapon when he was in the Buddha's presence. The Buddha called him in and said, I'll teach you the Dharma. He listens to the Dharma. He thought that he had any idea about fetters, but he attained stream entry. And his fetters were cut. So it's not that you ponder the fetters first, then let go of them. There's a path that you follow. This is a problem that's common throughout the West. We read about awakening, cuts the fetters, so we say, well, let's go straight to cutting the fetters. We read about jhana, descriptions of jhana. So we say, let's just do what's said in the descriptions of jhana. You don't do the descriptions of jhana. You do what's told in the description of right mindfulness. Those are the instructions for getting into concentration. Then when you attain concentration, you're ready to contemplate things. And this is exactly how the Buddha says you arrive at a place where the fetters have been cut, or at the very least the lower fetters. You start with your practice of concentration. You get really good at it. He compares it to being an archer, able to shoot long distances, fire in rapid succession, pierce great masses. In other words, you see the implications of what you're doing. You pierce the mass of ignorance, and you quickly see things in terms of the Four Noble Truths. It's one meaning of the analogy. But here it means simply that you're really good at concentration. Once you're good enough, then you can start contemplating it. And you begin to see that it's made up out of aggregates, the same aggregates that go into your sense of self, the same aggregates that, when you cling to them, are suffering. But here you have them in a very pleasant state. You've got the breath, which is form. You've got the feeling of pleasure that goes with the breath. That's feeling. You've got the perception that holds you with the breath, how you visualize the breath coming in and going out, where it goes in the body, how it goes in the body, what sensations in the body can be labeled as breath sensations. All that is perception. Then there's the intention to stay here, the direct of thought and evaluation as you try to adjust the breath, adjust the mind so they fit together snugly. That's all the aggregate of fabrication, and then consciousness, which is aware of all these things. As you contemplate these things, you see this is the best thing that the aggregates can do. You get really attached to the concentration, but then you begin to see that it has its limitations. This, the Buddha says, you start perceiving it in terms of being in constant, stressful, not self, variations on those three perceptions. Being empty, a dart, a disease. Fleeting. As you begin to contemplate the drawbacks, the mind inclines for something that is not fabricated. And it's a natural inclination at this point, because you've seen how good fabrication can be and you can see the limitations. You stay in this state of concentration, there's going to be stress. You stay in another, there's going to be stress. Where do you go? At that point, the mind inclines to the deathless, which is unfabricated. And then based on that experience, either you gain full awakening, or just the five lower fetters are cut, if you have some passion for that experience. But still, the fetters are cut after the experience of the deathless. Because only the deathless can confirm for you. Yes, the Buddha knew what he's talking about. There is this deathless dimension. It is the end. It is the end of suffering. So your doubts about the Buddha are totally cut through confirmed conviction, confirmed confidence. And you see that this consciousness that you have of the deathless, which the Buddha calls consciousness without service. Something that has nothing to do with the aggregates, something that has nothing to do with the six sense spheres. Those all go away at that point. So there's no reason to identify yourself around those aggregates. You found something that has nothing to do with them at all. Something that's better than anything you can create out of the aggregates. As for habits and practices, you realize that followed good habits to get here, but it was through an act of discernment that allowed you to break through. And your attitude toward the practices you've been doing changes at that point. As the Buddha says, you are virtuous, but you are not made of virtue. In other words, you stick with the precepts, you stick with the good habits the Buddha taught, but you don't create any identity around them. You don't take pride in the fact that you're virtuous and other people are not. You see them more as medicine. You have to take the medicine. But you realize also that the reason you hadn't seen this deathless dimension before was because of breaking the precepts in the past. So you never intentionally break the precepts again. The experience is that radical, that astounding. And only an experience that astounding can really cut through the fetters. So this is how it's done. You follow the steps of the path as the Buddha laid them out. As the Buddha said, there's no inside or outside teaching. It's not that he taught the Eightfold Path to everybody outside and then taught the fetters to the insiders. And it's striking how few times he actually mentions the fetters in the texts, whereas the path and the factors of the path are mentioned again and again. Those are the things you focus on. You do what needs to be done to get there. Then the result is not something you have to plan or have to anticipate. It's going to happen. And it's in this way that the fetters get cut. The root of the tree gets cut and none of the fruit falls down to the ground. You're safe. Because that also means none of the fruit's going to fall down and hit you on the head. There are people who think they've attained some of the noble attainments and they're very far away. And from the point of view of the forest tradition, that's one of the most difficult defilements to solve and also one of the most dangerous. So see things in terms of a cause and effect. Focus on the causes. And the results will come, and they'll bring you more than you could anticipate. When you approach the fetters in that way, then you're safe. You don't get hit on the head. No new trees grow on the ground.